Sidney Pollack's death took me by surprise. I'd just seen his name listed Sunday night in the credits of the HBO film Recount as an executive producer. Pollack has a role in the current film, Maid of Honor. He had a prominent role in last year's Oscar-winning Michael Clayton. Pollack died of cancer yesterday at the age of 73. He was diagnosed 9 months ago. He started his career as an actor in the late 1950s, then made his name as a director. He directed Sidney Poitier and Anne Bancroft in The Slender Thread, Jane Fonda in They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, Robert Redford and Barbara Streisand in The Way We Were, Paul Newman in Absence of Malice, Dustin Hoffman and Bill Murray in Tootsie, Robert Redford and Meryl Streep in Out of Africa, and Tom Cruise in The Firm. We're going to listen back to the interview I recorded with Pollack, but first let's hear a scene from Michael Clayton. Pollack plays Marty Bach, the head of a law firm which is handling a case that's falling apart because the head litigator, Arthur Edens, is having a nervous breakdown and expressing doubts about the case. Unless the situation is brought under control, this threatens the very future of the firm. Bach is talking to Michael Clayton, the law firm's fixer, played by George Clooney.
I don't know how you're going to take care of this, but this is cancer. This is something we don't get it reined in and cleaned up soon. Everything's vulnerable. Everything.
What are you telling me?
That I'm counting on you. I'm telling you that by this time next week, Arthur will be under control and everybody who needs to will have been reminded of your infinite value.
Jesus, Marty.
Hey, why did you get so f***ing delicate? I'm late.
I spoke with Sidney Pollack in 1990.
A lot of our listeners will know the way you look from your role in Tootsie. You not only directed the movie, but you played the role of Dustin Hoffman's agent. And I want to play a clip from a scene here in which Dustin Hoffman kind of storms into your office. And he, of course, plays this kind of difficult, self-absorbed actor. This is a scene before he takes the part of a woman's role in a soap opera. And he's in your office demanding to know why you can't get him a decent part, why he's always out of work.
You've got one of the worst reputations in this town, Michael. Nobody will hire you.
Are you saying that nobody in New York will work with me?
Oh, no, that's too limited. Nobody in Hollywood wants to work with you either. I can't even send you up for a commercial. You played a tomato for 30 seconds. They want a half a day over schedule because you wouldn't sit down.
Yes, it wasn't logical.
You were a tomato! A tomato doesn't have logic! A tomato can't move!
That's what I said. So if he can't move, how's he gonna sit down, George? I was a stand-up tomato, a juicy, sexy beefsteak tomato. Nobody does vegetables like me. I did an evening of vegetables off Broadway. I did the best tomato, the best cucumber. I did an endive salad that knocked the critics on their ass.
One of the funny things about that scene is that it almost seems to be a joke about how obsessive Dustin Hoffman is as an actor. And I've always wondered if that scene reflects at all what the real working relationship was like.
Well, there was an awful lot written about the amount of arguing that Dustin and I were doing publicly. A lot of it true and a lot of it exaggerated. There's an element that Dustin is famous for of his, of his fastidiousness that can sometimes drive people crazy. But and it's true that we argued and fought, not oddly enough about the acting. We fought mostly about script. We had slightly differing points of view about the tone of that, about what the tone of that picture ought to be, and so we argued. But usually we got our arguments over with fairly early in the morning, and by the time we got out on the set and started really working as director and actor within the context of a scene, we rarely argued after that.
It seems to me you were probably the kind of director who'd be more understanding of a very obsessive actor, having taught actors and having been the, executive director of the West Coast branch of the Actors Studio. I mean, these you've worked with a lot of, method actors.
Well, I started out as a teacher, actually. So the only thing I had as a tool when I began to direct was some understanding of the psychology of actors, let's say, or a language, a vocabulary to talk with them. I had no sense of how to talk to a writer, and I didn't know which end of a camera to look through because my background had all been theater. But I was comfortable with actors and always have been, really.
How come you haven't acted more? I mean, at what point you started off acting? At what point in your career did you think that, although you loved theater, that acting wasn't for you?
Somebody recommended to me, actually a director named John Frankenheimer, and then Burt Lancaster, the actor. I'd worked together with them on a movie as a coach. I was a dialogue coach for a couple of young actors on a movie in 1960 called The Young Savages. And they both encouraged me very strongly to direct. And that was a new idea to me. It was not something I never had any strong goals to be a director. And they pushed very hard. And so I thought, well, what the hell, I'll try it. And so I moved to California and I started doing it. Once I began to do that, I had no thoughts about acting at all. Dustin really pushed me into doing that. I never would have played that part. That was another source of irritation, is he started insisting that I play this part. Dustin believes that there's enough to make up on a set, that any time you can get close to the truth, you should do it. And what he kept saying was, I don't know why I put the dress on. In Some Like It Hot, the guys put the dress on because of machine guns. They're gonna die if they don't disguise themselves. We got to really get me a reason. I kept saying, well, when your agent says to you, you're never going to work again, and he says, well, I would put it on if you said it to me, but I wouldn't put it on if a peer said it to me, because I had a very good actor all set to play that part. And he kept saying, I want you to play that part. And I kept saying, Dustin, you're crazy. I got enough to do. I haven't acted in years, and I don't want to do it. And finally, he started sending me flowers, dozens of roses, saying, please be my agent, love Dorothy, you know. And I really ended up doing it basically to mollify him.
Well, you know, the him wanting to know, like, why is he putting on a dress reminds me of him in the scene wanting to know, you know, like, how can a tomato sit down?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Were there other explanations you had to give him in the movie?
Not so much explanations, but...
Motivations.
But yeah, motivations. Well, no, it's very hard to do what an actor does, and it's very subjectively driven, and it's very, very hard for a very good actor, and Dustin is a very good actor. It's very, very hard for them sometimes to see in third person, which is really the director's job, of how this is going to work. Because to do the part well, you begin to see the world from inside of the role. And sometimes you can get confused or you misunderstand intentions which are coming from the outside in, which is, you know, the director trying to have some sort of overview of it. So occasionally, sure, there are always, I wouldn't say fights, but discussions about how can I do this or how can I do that when this happened? And then you have to carefully explain it, not so much with intellectual logic, but with some sort of behavioral logic.
You were explaining that your transition into directing was working as a dialogue coach for a movie Frankenheimer directed, The Young Savages.
Mm-hmm.
And that starred Burt Lancaster and Shelley Winters.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do as dialogue coach? And did you work directly with Lancaster and Winters?
No, what I did, well, my job originally was to, there were three young men in that picture who were very inexperienced. They were kind of novice, new actors. They were playing juvenile delinquents. And my job basically was to kind of coach them in their acting and work with them on the roles. I had done that once before on a television show called The Turn of the Screw, a Playhouse 90 that John Frankenheimer had directed. And he had used me in that capacity. And I was able to do it without getting in his way. It's a tough job to do, to try to kind of direct actors and not get in the way of the director. But in this case, my job was to help these novice actors act. And Lancaster got curious as to what I was doing. And he used to say, hey, kid, come over here. What are you telling those kids? You know, and he started kidding around with me. And I began to talk to him about what I was talking to them about. And then he would occasionally talk to me about a scene himself. And we started to talk it over. And when the picture was all done and I was supposed to come back to New York, I got a message from his secretary. He had a big office at Columbia. Said, Mr. Lancaster wants to talk to you. And I went over there, and he sat behind his desk, and he said, you know, you ought to be a director. You really should. What do you want to be told what to do when you can be telling everybody what to do for? That was the way he put it. And he picked up the phone, and he called Lou Wasserman and said, Lou, I got a kid here. I don't know if he can direct, but I think he's talented. I want you to talk to him. And I'm quoting verbatim now, and he said, in any case, it can't be worse than those bums you got working for you now. And he said, so I had to go see Lou Wasserman feeling like an absolute dope, because Lou was clearly doing Bert a favor. He couldn't have cared less about me, and I must say he was a wonderful man. I went to see him in the office there, and he said, Bert says you should be a director. And I said, well, I guess. He says, well, have you ever directed anything? I said, nope. And, you know, I just sort of sat there like a dope. And he said, look, here's what I'll do. You come to California, and I'll let you come and observe for 6 months out at Universal Studios. I'll put you under the wing of a producer. And we'll go a step at a time. If they think you're talented, we'll see if we can get you a television show to do. And that's, in fact, what I did.
We're listening to a 1990 interview with actor, director, and producer Sidney Pollack. He died yesterday at the age of 73. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening back to a 1990 interview with director, actor, and producer Sidney Pollack. He died of cancer yesterday at the age of 73.
There's something very New York about you. I mean, in Tootsie, you're the New York agent. You said that Burt Lancaster thought of you as the New York acting coach. You're from Indiana. How did you get to be so New York?
I guess that was the age that I was when I got here. I was 17. I just gotten out of high school. And I spent those years, seven years, between the time I was 17 and 24, and I guess they're sort of formative years, and I took to New York like a guy who'd, you know, been missing it all his life. I don't know. I just felt at home here from the first day I got off a train and settled in at a YMCA and sort of, you know, went to school and began making friends. It still feels like home in many ways to me.
Do you have any cameos in movies from your acting days that we could look for you in?
I mean,
small parts. I shouldn't say cameos. You weren't a star doing a little
star turn there. I'm in a lot of my movies, but not in anything recognizable. I'm in 3 Days of the Condor, and I'm in Electric Horseman.
Uh-huh.
But usually that'll happen because sometimes the hardest thing to do is if you have one line. You have a character, let's say, that's got one line, and it's with one of the stars, and it's during movement, let's say the scene is a dollying shot or a tracking shot or something that's difficult technically, and you need somebody to hit a mark and say one line. Well, it's really gets tough sometimes because the actors that are playing parts that small, it's really unfair to them to rush them in and have them do it quickly. They're nervous. They're much more nervous than somebody who's got a bigger role to play and can get accustomed to the star. They're nervous in front of the star. They're nervous in front of the director. And sometimes you just lose an enormous amount of time. And rather than go through it all, I stick a mustache on sometimes and throw a, you know, and comb my hair funny and just jump in and do it. Not because I like acting, but just in the interest of efficiency.
Most of your movies, including your new movie, Havana, were shot in Panavision. What is Panavision exactly?
Well, Panavision is a brand name. We think of it as synonymous with widescreen. Mm-hmm. Actually, it isn't. Widescreen, the real name is scope. It's a ratio of the height of the screen to the width of the screen. And the Panavision or scope ratio is very wide. It's 2.33:1. The length from left to right is 2.33 times as long as the height is high. In other words, it'd be 2.33 inches wide to 1 inch high in that ratio. And it has a very different feeling than the standard film ratio, which is 1.85:1, which is what Havana is shot in. I love the widescreen, not for any other reason than you can get more information per second on the screen. When I did a film like They Shoot Horses, Don't They, which was all interiors, everybody argued with me about why in God's name I would want a widescreen process inside on a dance floor. And the answer was because I could see all of the other couples and still be in close-up on Jane Fonda and Michael Sarrazin, or that I would always have a sense of the background or a sense of environment. So I always loved this widescreen process. The problem is, as more and more revenue began to come in from ancillary markets like television and cassettes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horrifying experience to see a scope picture on television. You see two noses, one on each side of the screen, talking to each other. It's a terrible experience. So the last two films, Out of Africa and Havana, I've shot in the standard ratio.
What were the movies that you really loved growing up that made you want to act?
The movies that I remember very vividly as a young man were movies like A Place in the Sun and Shane, The Best Years of Our Lives. All the Kazan movies, I think, were the ones that made me think a lot about acting. Mm-hmm. By the time I was watching Kazan's movies, I was occasionally in some small plays in school, and watching Viva Zapata and On the Waterfront and East of Eden and films like that. I was very aware for the first time of that was the first time I was really aware of a director, I think.
Yeah.
I always identified him with these great performances.
I was reading about you in a current biography, and it described you as being known as a lion tamer because of your success with temperamental big-name stars, because you've worked with Streisand and Streep, Redford, Hoffman, Newman. Do you think you have to be a lion tamer to work with temperamental big-name stars? I mean, do you think of yourself as having to deal with temperament a lot?
Not at all. Really not at all. I mean, I don't find them to be any more temperamental or any more difficult. I don't know why you would refer to them as a lion tamer, but I suppose the conventional picture of a star is someone who's got a big ego and bosses people around and therefore is difficult to work with. That's really not true. To be honest with you, I've found more temperament among the people that aren't the stars than I've found with the stars that I've worked with.
Actor, director, and producer Sidney Pollack, recorded in 1990. He died of cancer yesterday at the age of 73.